original, still the best, now for more than 12 years. This is Radio Free Cybertron, hosted by Brian Kilby, with J.D. Church, John DeLuna, XV, Amy Morgan, Peter Van, and Rob Clay. For the latest Transformers news, visit tformers.com.
This is Radio Free Cybertron for July 19th, 2012. It's not actually July 19th. And it won't be posted on July 19th, but that's the day we date this, because that's what...
That's just a date that we pulled out at random to say...
We stick it on Thursdays.
Why don't you just call it Stardate 569? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's true. When we had episode 250, which might have been four episodes ago, I need to go back and count. I think we may actually just start numbering the show.
This is the episode for February 30th.
When dates become arbitrary, we're pretty screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to tell if this is like episode 250 or 252. I can't remember. There's just so many episodes. I gotta go back and count.
353.7.
There's like two episodes that are missing. I just gotta figure out if there's a count.
We've been doing something off and on. This is the most exciting start to a show ever.
It's fantastic. Is it not? So we just got done speaking with Jim Sorensen and Bill Forster about Transformers Legacy, as well as G.I. Joe Field Manual. That will be up later in the show. Also, this week, we have lots and lots of stuff. This past weekend was San Diego Comic-Con, and we did live coverage. And we have Chris McFeely on this week. Chris was really awesome and helped cover that. So there was a lot of great Transformers conversation that will be up later. We were talking about, Breakdown, sort of the lack thereof, at least from Hasbro, as well as talking about the G2 comic and Bruticus and Regeneration. So lots of great stuff there. And Amy got a chance to play Fall of Cybertron at San Diego Comic-Con. We'll be talking about that, as well as Transformers Rewind this week, which is Battle Protocol. This is a jam-packed show. God, there's so much to talk about. So the big news is, of course, San Diego Comic-Con was this past weekend. So, as always, an indeterminate amount of time later, the stuff, remainders and some stock that was held back, was put on Hasbro Toy Shop. And that landed today, or yesterday, arbitrarily.
Or 4 days ago. Or a year ago, depending on when you're listening to the show.
Yes.
Wednesday at 12:05.
So, yeah, so I'll be honest. This was basically going to be an anniversary gift, so I've made an attempt to check HTS every 1.5 minutes since Sunday since Monday morning to see when the stuff would be available, and it so happened to be today. So as soon as I hit refresh and it came up, it was only like 10 seconds before that. It's like Gem was already sold out. Not that I was going to buy Gem, but the thing's like $130. How does that sell out like immediately?
Yeah, that was the first thing to sell out from this batch of exclusives, and it's just like, what?
Yeah.
They must have only had like 10 of them.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't have made that many of them.
Okay, so fewer than 10?
I don't know. Was anybody besides me able to snag what they wanted?
Alright! Let's talk! Okay? Because... Me, I've been checking for like 2 days because I decided I was going to get Bruticus. All right, I was like, I'm going to be there for it. I've got my new phone. I've got my Galaxy S3. It's leaked. So this morning, like, I figured this was the day. XV assured me this would be the day. So I went in and I like changed my login. I had my credit card information updated so I'd be all ready to go. And I'm like, refreshing. I'm talking to XV during the day because I'm not really working. I mean, I'm working, but I'm not really working.
then, so I'm like, refresh. And, like, XV's like, go! And I, like, Link is there. I'm like, all right. And I go, and I click Bruticus. Goes in my deal. I was like, sweet. I get Cliffjumper. That goes in my cart. Sweet. Ready to go. Hit proceed to checkout, and it refreshes the page.
Ha! That sucks.
Proceed to checkout, refreshes the page. Proceed to checkout, refreshes the page. I'm flipping out. Click, refresh, nothing.
Wait, you click proceed to checkout and it just refreshes the page instead of taking
that's all it did.
Cycles back to the cart.
Right. So then
this
like,
is a well known error.
So this is a Hasbro Toy Shop issue. Okay.
Yeah. So what happens is Bruticus sells out while I'm trying to get my cart to work. I proceed to spend the next hour trying even different browsers that won't let me log into Hasbro Toy Shop. I'm logged in on Chrome on my phone, but it won't let it work. I finally get logged out, logged back in, and amazingly it works, and I'm able to get Cliffjumper, which still took another like 15 or 20 minutes, of which both Brian and XV assure me, don't worry about it. Cliffjumper will be there tonight. You'll be okay.
In our defense, last year's Transformers Prime Comic-Con exclusives are still there.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
True.
So there was really no basis to think that, hey, Cliffjumper is going to sell out today.
So I'll
rally behind that.
But whatever, I'm like, I'm still going to get it because I'm so frustrated I missed out on Bruticus. I just want to complete my transaction and at least get something out of it. So I get my confirmation, I get my complete. I'm like, okay, good, go down, get my lunch, come back, and I get this message from XV. Oh, yeah, we were wrong on that. Cliffjumper sold out. It's like, woo, at least I got that. But, man, I cannot tell you the level of frustration for having the thing in my cart.
Well, okay, dude.
And losing it.
Dude, welcome to Maddie Collector every month.
Oh, I know. And some of it is I think I was logged in so long that probably it had logged me out and I just didn't know it. I don't know. There was something funky.
Somehow,
it wouldn't subtotal. That's what I figured out, is I had the two items in my cart, but it wasn't subtotaling. So it's almost like they were in my cart, but they weren't like in my cart where I could check out. It's really strange.
It might not have let you write a cookie to your phone.
There could be something, yeah.
Yeah, so I was able to get Roboto on Maddie Collector, like, on my phone in the woods on a Windows Mobile 6.5 running, like, Internet Explorer. I don't know how I was able to do that, and you were not able to get that.
I know.
So what Brian's trying to say is, way to screw up, JD.
I know. And
the sadder part of it is, when I found out JD was having problems, I was trying to put an order through, too, because, you know, he could pay me for it later, and it was working on my side. But I'm telling you, I was like 5 seconds too late to click the proceed or the place order button.
Yeah.
You know, it sold out after I confirmed my payment method, and that was the end of it.
It's all good, really. I mean, it's like, I wait a month, and I'm still going to get the mold and stuff. So it was kind of probably too impulsive for me to do that anyway. I'm way more excited about getting the Cliffjumper, to be honest. Like, that's really what I wanted. So at least I got that.
Yeah, I had Bruticus in my, cart, and I elected not to get it because I didn't really want it. I only kind of wanted it because it was going to be rare.
But then you could be like that dude and turn around and sell it for $300 and then, like, make $200 on it.
Or you could be an actual dude and pass it on to JD at cost because you don't want it.
True. True.
But
that's too righteous.
I did end up getting what I really wanted, which was the His Tank and Cliffjumper. I skipped on Jinx, though. I came really close. I'm like, I don't really want Jinx that bad. Is Helicarrier still available? I think,
it sold out.
Helicarrier lasted longer than everything else, but late this afternoon it did finally sell out.
Well, Hasbro did good this year, though.
I mean,
if you think about it, for as much stuff that's still up there, everything from this year is gone.
Well, actually, if you hurry up and go now, it looks like you can still get, the Bumblebee and RC set from last year.
Yes, you can do that. So, wasn't that New York Comic-Con, though? That wasn't saying
that. Yeah, and Sandra said they're not going to have a presence at New York Comic-Con this year.
I can't... Well, okay, it's not the Comic-Con's fault that they put out a crap set. I mean, they put out a Bumblebee, and then that RC mold is just not meant to have that pink color on it. It's just, you know... They picked a bad set for that. But to make up for it, I got my breakdown in the mail today. So I don't know if my video is working, but you see I got my Japanese breakdown.
It's
cool. Good deal. But I got my Japanese breakdown in the mail today.
Tell the story.
Is it blocky? Is it as blocky as it looks?
It is a little bit. Here's the deal with this breakdown. And I totally understand what Hasbro is saying now that I have it in hand. Because so many of the parts are designed really thin, and you know, I would be afraid of getting this in a kid's hands because these parts are going to break off and shard. For an example of like a design flaw with this figure, as far as the elbows go, you have to turn the forearms completely straight before you can rotate them. If you don't, you're going to break the what ends up being the railing, the foot railing, on the truck part. That's going to totally break off when you turn the arm. You have to turn it straight, and then you can rotate it and pose, but you can't have it at an angle and rotate it, because then that's going to break off.
So I shouldn't buy this.
No, you shouldn't.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm cool with having it. I'm totally going to put it right next to, like, my bulkhead U.S. version. But, you know, the Micron feature is kind of cool, you know, but, I mean, overall for the price, no. Like, if this was a $20 figure, I would feel fine. But having to pay the markup plus what the price is going to go up because it's not going to be available in the U.S., no.
So does Takara sell their, like, unsold stock to Ross? That would be fantastic.
That would be great, but no.
No, I don't.
No. Yeah, and especially, Brian, you don't want to buy it, because, man, you would break this, like, instantly.
and, of course, there's a matter of putting stickers on it. I don't know.
Yeah, how long did it take me, actually? Because I texted you when I started, and then when I was done. It brought probably about 45 minutes.
Between putting
the, because I have...
You were idle for quite a while there.
Yeah, because I had to put the Micron thing together... which actually is pretty cool. I do like the little Micron deal, because it's a little ram that turns into a hammer. You know, but God, I mean, sticker application, especially when it's like multiple pieces of stickers and trying to get all the lines to line up. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. Probably the coolest part as far as on that is like there's a little clear piece of like hexagonal plastic that you put over a silver background Decepticon logo. That kind of looks cool. It almost looks like a logo, like you'd think like the old like insignia gems that were in like the Beast Wars figures and stuff. Kind of spark, like the spark crystals. But it looks a lot better because like there's a sticker underneath it. So, but anyway, but yeah, a breakdown. I mean, unless you're like, you know, oh my God, freaking out, I must have a Voyager breakdown. I totally see why Hasbro doesn't want to import this mold. It would break so fast. What was your comment on it, XV? About why we want Hasbro to import this?
Oh, it was, but dumb Hasbro won't give us the fragile toys we want, so when it breaks, we can blame them.
I'm Buster Jones, and this is Radio Free Cybertron.
Still crying about breakdown. We're getting no breakdown.
You know what? I know that we live in a time now where we're used to getting everything on both sides, paint jobs notwithstanding, and that I should accept that not necessarily getting everything is not a new thing or anything. But I don't understand this. Like, Archer can throw around all the corporate buzzwords. pricing and structures and goalposts and what the people want.
Yeah, I mean, and there's reasons we can't get this specific breakdown toy, but it doesn't explain why.
I don't understand why there isn't a breakdown toy. You know, it's one thing whenever you're talking about Armada or Energon or Cybertron or one of these shows with big casts where the seventh guy from the left doesn't get made, and maybe somebody goes, oh, it would be nice if we could have had that one dude, but it's not, you know, it's not a giant gaping. There are like five dudes on each side in Prime, and I'm not knocking the show for that, but it is, why is one of those five dudes, I mean, why are we not getting a breakdown? It's like, I can understand why we're not getting this breakdown. If this truly was a Takara-originated mold that is does not work within the confines of the pricing structure and whatever, that was breakdown left to Takara? He was one of literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 named, like, 7 if you count the Viacons, like, Decepticon characters in Season 1. And I mean, I know Prime's whole thing was that it was a cartoon first to prove its strength as an IP, and Hasbro was an IP company over just a toy advert and everything. But you gotta have some level of synergy. You know, we've had toys of the guest character Autobots who have appeared in like one or two episodes each before we have had breaks. Exactly. Why? I understand what you're saying with the monetary things. I would just like this. This is one of those just straight up, please answer it questions that nobody ever seems to have the cojones on them to just ask at a convention for straight. Why did you not make a breakdown?
We asked that at Comic-Con, and Aaron Archer just said it was...
Yeah, you got your double-speak answer.
Right, exactly. He was like, same standards, cost-wise... No, but I mean,
phrase the sentence? Did you ask, what about the breakdown? Or did you say, why did you not make a breakdown?
Well, we didn't know, that's the question...
Yeah, you didn't know at the time, yeah.
That's the next question you would ask, is why didn't you make the breakdown? But... He said that it's available and that's...
Hey, that's great, Aaron. Why didn't you make
And then he was asking... they did ask about why it was produced differently. He said that usually they don't... Well, he said, per se, they don't develop things together, like, you know...
Hey, that's great, Aaron. You didn't develop them together. Why didn't you start development of one of the main characters from the show?
Right, so there he was saying that they didn't develop them together, they are aware of each other's molds, and they're like, oh, you're developing Wheel Jack? Okay, I'll bring it too. I'll work on it as well at the same time, yada yada. So, it just seems like maybe they didn't expect Breakdown to be so popular or something.
I don't give a shit about popularity. I'm not that enamored with Breakdown as a character. He's one of 7 dudes! Why is he not on my shelf?
Yeah, and what about, like, the, like Dreadwing and,
they have Dreadwing in the works already from Season 2. Aside from everything else, like, this just really calls into question, is that why Breakdown is dead now? Did they have him off unceremoniously like that because they weren't going to do a toy and they needed to correct their mistake? If that's the case, why does it look like Breakdown is going to be the culmination of the mech plot that was basically kicked off with mech's first appearance and led up to the whole Project Chimera thing, all their subsequent appearances leading into Nemesis Prime to lead to this, in which Breakdown is a key factor, even if he is dead? I was hoping that, you know, Breakdown would still haunt Silas in some respect, in like Echo of his Spark or Leftover Data Trek or something, and he and Silas would fight for control of his body. But no, I'm really doubting that, because why should they give such time to the character that they, for some...
That's what Takara is doing. I mean, they're doing a Cyrus toy.
I mean, I know it's a recolor, but...
Make a Skyquake, and then they said, hey, we're just going to do a Dreadwing, then we'll put out a Skyquake, which is makes even less sense, right? Because Skyquake is now dead, and he's not in
dead
the show.
Twice over.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's an easy repint, so I'm not going to hold that against
I get that part of it, but they're still releasing Toy of Dead Character.
Yeah.
You know, they could release Breakdown into a recolor or two, like the Takara's already planning.
Yeah, it's like the number of recolors to cut. Is it like because they had to go ahead and develop him independently that Takara are wringing the life from the molds to justify it?
They're on the third, right? So yes. Breakdown, then they're on the Silas version, and then as well as Swerve, right? So there's three of them.
Already. And see what I would have liked, now that I've seen the Cyberverse one, get Breakdown here, recolor as Outback.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually is a good fit for that vehicle form. I kind of dig that.
I just, you know, it's one of those situations where I would just like to know more. I would just like to know why, when there is such, it's like having a Beast Wars storyline and not having a Tigatron. I suppose if you want to make a direct compare, not having a Black Arachnia. Okay, no, not having an Inferno for the level of importance the character has. Like,
yeah, I think Inferno, I think, is a good fit. Yeah, it would be like not having Inferno for Beast Wars.
Quick Strike, maybe.
Well, Quick Strike was Season 2, so I'm just purely limiting it to characters from...
Okay, Season 1, on that level...
characters
then,
added to the cast. I'm not saying Breakdown was the most wonderful character or anything, and I'm not one of these people who is in such a tizzy over his death that they've mentally rewritten his role in the show to have him be one of the most interesting members of the cast. 2005 Boars! But I'm just really confused as to why we're not getting the toy.
Right.
And why it seems to have been their plan that we would never get the toy.
Maybe they have to hold something for October, you know?
I mean, I'm getting a toy, I just have to pay, like, three times the retail price, you know, what figure would be worth to get it.
Although, you know, the funny thing is, I'm beginning to wonder if they had always planned on... They might have just canceled him at one point there, because it was a Cybertron Con where they said, we're making a Breakdown toy, right?
They did, yeah. It was Asia convention. It was a Hasbro convention. Yeah, yeah.
That's
exactly.
That's a joint Hasbro Takara convention. And why would Hasbro announce this? Come over and announce
this. I'm wondering if there's something about the design of the toy that isn't allowing it to pass American standards.
I think we're not being told. I think his chest is.
Yeah, because
it turns into a gigantic spike that drives itself into a child's eye.
It could be. I mean, that's, you know, I wouldn't put that past Takara, because they hate children.
Micron line is supposed to be about kids.
Yeah, well, but I don't know. It's like, it almost makes me wonder if there's something about the design of that particular figure that can't be changed, I mean, it is a big, big hunk of plastic. You know, and that's got to be pretty cost prohibitive.
Like, I don't buy into the people who are rationalizing that he doesn't have clear plastic, so obviously Hasbro couldn't possibly release him.
Although there is truly clear plastic in the forearms, from what I've read.
That's what I've heard, too, yeah.
Hmm.
And it's like, I don't know. I just, there's something we're not being told about that, and it's annoying me because it's a even though he's dead now, it's still a noticeable hole.
Yeah. Besides, I'm going to want this figure for when whatever third party makes the head replace with the eye patch. So,
That's it. We've already seen that the Silas repaint of this in black at the convention, and it looked like he had an eye patch head.
Yeah, he's definitely going to have that, right? Because if not, they wouldn't call him the Cyrus Reaping.
Right. Well, I mean, they've changed his color.
He's just going to have a no eye socket. That'd be even more. It'd be even better. Can you imagine if he just didn't have an eye?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's strange. It is strange.
I'm looking forward to the resolution in the show, but I'm really hoping that, you know, Breakdown is going to haunt Silas in some respect, and he and Silas will fight for control of his body, and then probably, well, what I would like to see happen would be that that's happening, you know, and whatever it is, I don't know whether it's over the course of one episode or multiple episodes or whatever, and whatever evil plot Mech tries to enact using Silas in Breakdown, Breakdown is able to seize control of the body just long enough to let Bulkhead destroy him, adding some closure to their relationship by him allowing him to destroy him in order to stop Mech from doing anything. Of course, then I realized that means Bulkhead has to not die. I don't know where that's going.
Hmm.
Find out this fall.
Yeah, find out when new episodes come back.
I am so behind on Prime, too. I got to catch up.
It's off the air right now.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I've only seen, like, 3 or 4 episodes of the season that just ended, so.
It's on hiatus right now.
Right, what I'm saying is, the last episode I saw was Drill, or whatever, where they were, I didn't actually see it, but, like, that's the episode I'm up to, where they interrogate,
yeah.
I guess so, yeah, the clip show.
Yeah, well, there's only, like, 5 more after that.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. So I'm still, that's why I'm saying I still need to catch up to current.
Well, get to work, boy.
Radio Free Cybertron will return after these messages. You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Wrecker the Demolisher to the rescue!
Ideal's new RoboForce. Warrior robots with gripper bases and crusher arms, each sold separately.
Hundreds escaping!
Okay in there?
Okay, Dad!
But we won't be safe till we're rid of Hundred.
Hundred the Conqueror, Max Steel the Leader, Wrecker the Demolisher, each sold separately. New from Ideal's RoboForce.
In a cold, far away world.
This is Stan Bush, and you're listening to Radio Free Cybertron. Fighting the war for Cybertron till all are one.
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise. Transformers.
We now return to Radio Free Cybertron. Time for Comic News with Amy Morgan.
Hello, it's Amy, and I'm back once again with the Transformers News and Reviews in 5 minutes. It's been a little while since I've done one of these, so there's a lot to go through, and I'm going to go through it as fast as I can and as succinctly as I can because, yeah, we've got a lot going on today. And yeah. Anyhow, Regeneration 1, 80.5, Free Comic Book Day comic that I mentioned in my last review. I said that you get it for free on Comixology. Well, you can. You can get it now. Just search Regeneration 1, and it should be on here. It's this one right here, but you can't read it because it's backlit. Yes, it's for free, and if you have, like I said, if you're seeing this video, then you have a computer and you can download it and you can look at it and you can see what was on that. It's pretty easy. I just searched Regeneration 1 and boom, there it was. So, very happy that that's available. So if you didn't pick it up on Free Comic Book Day, you can get it now. Also, check out the Transformers Facebook page for more comic commentary. They are being pretty consistent about putting these up, so don't forget to jump over to Facebook and do that. Also, Amazon UK has revealed that we're going to be getting a Drift hardcover collection. I don't know if there's enough people out there that are really interested in that. I am. I'm going to get it because I really like Drift, but there are a lot of other people that may not be, so we'll see. I don't know why they're doing just a hardcover for that. There are other trades. There's Ironhide. There's Bumblebee. There are other trades, and they haven't gotten hardbacks. So I'm wondering why Drift is so special. Not that I'm complaining. I'm just wondering. Amazon UK spoiled it, so we know that we're possibly getting a Drift hardcover. So stay tuned for more details on that. I did an Autocracy Roundtable wrap-up interview, which you can check out on the Underbase. I will have links probably right around here. And because I'm moving into the next bit of news, which has something to do with San Diego Comic-Con, which was one of their reveals at San Diego Comic-Con, was that this creative team that did Autocracy will be coming back for a sequel called Monstrosity. So you can look forward to that. I'm not quite sure when it'll be coming out. I would guess that it'll be sometime in the next 6 months. Since they just announced it, they're probably working mad and crazy about it. I don't know if it's... I'm guessing that it'll still be a digital comic as well. Also, out of San Diego Comic-Con, we got a couple more reveals. There will be a Fall of Cybertron digital comic, and it will be written by John Barber. And there's going to be a Transformers Prime comic titled Rage of the Dinobots, written by Mike Johnson and Marguerite Scott Wright. Set in the time of Exiles, the book that was the prequel book, one of those books that came out, there was Exodus, then there was Exiles. And then this comic is supposedly supposed to lead us into season 3 of Transformers Prime. So, a little bit more Transformers Prime continuity, if you're interested. I'm not sure when it's going to be coming out, but I'm sure that when I find out about it, I will let you know in one of the news sections. So, October solicitations were also put out this week from IDW. And I'm going to give you a quick rundown of what was in that. We're going to get More Than Meets the Eye, Issue 10, which apparently is in the middle of Shadowplay story that they've teased. I have no idea what it is yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Somehow, possibly find out in October. But it's going to have Orion Pax in it. So I'm like, okay, that sounds pretty interesting. All right. Robots in Disguise, issue number 10, will also be out that month. This will continue the Orion Pax issue that we got in Robots in Disguise, issue 6. We are also going to be having Regeneration 1, issue number 84 that month. The only thing that I can tease about this one is that we might find out what's been going on Earth, because Megatron, the blurb was that he's going to tighten his grip on Earth. So I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll find out more about that. We're also going to be getting the U.S. Classics volume number 4 that month, and More Than Meets the Eye volume 2, which we should already have volume on. If you don't have it, you can purchase that now. And now for my comic reviews. One of the things about being just a little bit late is that I get to go to the comic shop and pick up props so I can show off what they look like. I picked up Robots in Disguise, issue number 7, the Casey Collar cover, because it's got Turmoil on it, and it was kind of the only one I could pick up, because sometimes when you go to a comic shop, you get whatever they give you. But yes, this is a really good issue. It is Wheeljack-centric, and it focuses mostly on him and what happens when Turmoil shows up. The art is great. It's done by Brendan Cahill, who usually isn't the artist that we have on Robots in Disguise. We usually have Andrew Griffith. Their styles seem just a little more similar rather than, like, you know, they just fit. It was a really good fit for to have Brendan Cahill come back. Now, we haven't seen him since Police Action, I believe, is when we saw him last. So it's kind of good to have somebody new for just a bit. And I'm sure Andrew was appreciating the break. One good thing that they did in this that I really liked, but it could also be a downside, I don't know. But they did this effect where, you know, they had regular panels, like right over here, but then they went through where they were going through something, it seemed like it was a little bit more slower paced, but because they put so much of it in this grid kind of format, because it's, Wheeljack is investigating, I'm not going to reveal too much, but he's investigating something that was told to the Autobots, and he wants to make sure that it is what Turmoil said it was. So he's investigating, and it could have really slowed the pace down, but because they used this grid effect and they put like the type below so it didn't break into the bubble, or into the panel, it kind of kept the pace going. So I was like, oh, wow. It was a comic device, a way that they arranged it. But for me, I was kind of impressed with that. Although it was a little bit different by the end of the issue, I was kind of used to it. But it did keep the pace moving, so it was used very wisely, and I really liked it. We also see a different side of Metalhawk. So he's not just the guy that keeps moaning about what the Autobots are or are not doing. So it was really good to see him kind of have something new about that character, because now I don't see him as the annoying one. I'm like, oh, okay, so he does have a personality. So it was really good to see that. In the end, we also get a nice little reveal that I'm not sure where they're going to go with it, but I'm really interested after reading it. I have absolute faith that John Barber will probably do a very good job of using this new technology or whatnot that they find at the end. But it's definitely perked my interest. So I'm well to see how, if they use it or if it's just something that they're dropping in there to use at a later date. I don't know. But yeah, this device that he has to find out about, there's a little reveal about it. So something to look forward to in this issue of Robots in Disguise, issue number 7. The next issue that I have is the one that's been long awaited since last year when we started a petition. The long awaited Transformers Regeneration, issue 81. Now, in the news section, I talked about how you could get the 80.5 free on Comixology. Well, that was because this came out. So might as well have 80.5 along with issue number 81. So, yeah, a really great start. This issue sets into motion what's going on with the Decepticons, what's going on with the Autobots. This issue sets up a lot of conflict. Conflict within characters. The Wreckers are even in here. Just lots of little things that are going on between factions of the Autobots and between factions of the Decepticons. It's quite literally, it's just one conflict after the next. But then they also have a conflict that the Wreckers solve pretty quickly, even though they were told not to interfere. But hey, you can't tell that to the Wreckers without them interfering, right? This is the original Wreckers, though. This is not the Wreckers of Last Stand of the Wreckers. This is Simon Furman's Wreckers. So these are the Wreckers that influenced the Wreckers that IDW has previously published. So it's kind of cool to see his take on them. And yes, they still just do whatever they do. It was just great. There's a conflict that Optimus Prime is dealing with. Really interested in reading more about that to find out how that plays a role in future story. And then again, we find some interesting things about what's happened on Earth. So, yeah, it was a really good issue. And I don't want to reveal too much because, well, if anybody out there hasn't already picked it up, I loved the art. The only little thing that I have to say that I want to kind of just niggle at is the fact that Springer, it just seems from panel to panel, his design kind of shifts and changes. So I'm sure that they'll probably figure that out in the next issue. If it keeps on end up being that, you know, it keeps on shifting like that, I'll be like, you got to do something about this. But other than that, I really like the comic. It has a very organic feel to it. The robots seem very humanistic. I mean, it's like they have robot armor on, and you know, they just I liked it. I really liked how they did it. I know it's not for everybody, but I really, really like it. I think Andrew Wildman is doing a great job. So yeah, it's finally here. So go and pick up your copy of number 81, because from here on in, we're gonna be getting this story. So you asked for it, IDW heard you, and they delivered. So that is the end of my comic news and reviews for Radio Free Cybertron. And yeah, go pick up your comics, and hopefully we will see you next week. Bye.
Radio Free Cybertron. Transformers.
Rewind.
Speak on Transformers Rewind Battle Protocol.
Battle Protocol activating now.
On September 8th, 2001, a giant robot hand crashed through a skyscraper in New York City, which pretty well sums up how well Battle Protocol fares in general.
The greatest danger to the planet Earth is the inefficient and improper use of energy.
Megatron kidnaps Dr. Onishi, a renowned scientist in the fields of archaeology and energy research, which go so naturally together. This leads to Onishi's son Koji, who is being stalked by Optimus Prime and serves to introduce us to the Transformers.
Where is this guy?
Get in! We've got to hurry!
Okay.
Optimus Prime takes Koji to New York, still under attack by evil alien robots, because that's exactly the right thing to do. But despite Optimus and several of his Autobots battling their Predacon opposite numbers, Megatron still gets away with Dr. Onishi.
You seem a little rusty, Optimus.
Can't let him win. Got to help Koji's father.
And that basically is everything that happened in the episode.
My power is greater than you can imagine. Either do as you're told or suffer the consequences! A taste of my sonic pain waves should convince you. This is merely a small sample of the punishment I can inflict.
That's all you need to know. That's it. That was great. All right, thanks. It really won't get any better from there.
Well, okay. I mean, that's the minutes of the episode, and to fill in between those points, apply a below-average Digimon dub to it.
Yeah. God. Yeah, there's a lot of things that are kind of like, well, couldn't he just go to New York and rescue Koji's dad without actually having to take him to the middle of the fight?
No. Yeah.
Apparently not. You know,
you put him in more danger than what you expected to. Like, come on now. You're trying to protect him, but yeah, you're putting him right in the middle of danger. What is going on with this?
How long?
Maybe if they put a barrier shield around him.
Yes. Oh, my God. The two big things that roll my eyes. Of course, they had to have, like, the power-up attacks and stuff in this. And, of course, one thing that bothered me is, if anything, the thing that got established that became long running, and something that we're still using in Prime, is this idea of a sort of teleportation bridge between, in Prime it's used between different points of Earth. It's used the same way in RID, but of course they called it the Global Space Bridge. Global.
It's global, yeah.
Space.
And they showed a nice picture of the globe and how somehow it goes underneath the Earth's crust and there's a little blinking light.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and see, in a way it's better than how it was portrayed in Car Robots, where they just have a network of tunnels under the ground and somehow, traveling straight through the Earth from Japan to New York will only take a few minutes, even though it would take,
it would still take a couple of hours.
It would take hours and hours by plane and, days by land and sea.
Right.
Mm-hmm. At least eight hours.
At least they try to pseudoscience it up a little bit to make that part seem a little less stupid.
Yeah. They But one of the worst power-ups is Prowl. Of course, you know, the cars, the vehicles for this toy line were... I mean, they definitely used some of the stuff that they had been... Because they, up to this point, they'd been making animals. So, yeah. You know, making that quick switch from animals to cars, I think, was a little bit odd for them because they're used to using ball joints and things. And so you see that in these toys.
You can tell in the first three cars that they're still in the Beast Wars Neo mindset with how they're designing this stuff. Later stuff evened it out a lot more, and the toys are generally better for it. But yeah, I mean, the Autobot brothers are really solidly in that mindset.
They're a mess! So Prowl ends up with, like, the big back end of the Diablo, you know, on the back of it, on his arm. And so he calls it, but in the show he calls it a barrier shield. What? A barrier shield? It's just, oh wow. I mean, that's one of those things.
It's a barrier that shields.
It's a barrier that shields. It's a blocking protector.
Yep.
It's a guarding protect. Yeah. Oh God. Anyway, it's just, there's just so many things that are like that that just make no sense. I mean, they make sense, but you're just like, really? That was the best you could come up with? A barrier shield? You're not even trying.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, 22-year-old Rob and 33-year-old Rob are really at odds about this episode, because 22-year-old Rob, I remember being, oh, wow, this is so anime. And 33-year-old Rob is, oh, wow, this is so anime.
So, Amy, this was new to you, though. What did you think?
Because when I first saw it, and I wasn't quite sure where it was set, so I went and did a little bit of Googling search on this one, because I thought, okay, wow, this is, okay, where did this take place? And because they didn't have the whole Decepticon thing, it was all Predacons, I thought, okay, that sounds like Beast Wars. Because up till now, I've seen G1, Beast Wars, Animated, and Prime. And Rescue Bots. I haven't seen Robots in Disguise, Armada, Energon, any of those ones yet. So I thought, okay, where is this set? And pretty much this is before Armada and Cybertron and Energon, and I was like, okay. And it's after Beast Wars, so I thought, okay. What I took away from it was it seems like it's a mishmash up of a lot of things that were going on at the time.
Well, and it really is, and that's that is an aspect of how the toy line was designed, where Takara took a lot of pre-existing toys, especially from the tail end of American Beast Wars, and basically recolored some and repackaged to make the toy line as we got it. There were Predacons in the U.S. They were called Deathstrongers in Japan, which is a little bit different from the Deathstrons that Japanese Beast Wars used. And, you know, there were so few new molds in the Car Robots line, and Hasbro had to really expand and pull in even more old stuff when they made Robots in Disguise. So
because
it's a serious
mission. I mean, if you look at like just the initial part of the series, really the only new molds are Prime, the Cars, and Megatron.
Yeah.
Everything else is a repaint. I mean, even when you get to the point of getting when the Decepticons are introduced later in the series, those are all repaints. Ruination is just Bruticus. What they call them, Scourge in the U.S., but it was basically like a Nemesis
Black
Prime,
Convoy.
Black Convoy, is Laser Prime from G2. I mean, there are a ton of recolors in this series, and trying to place it into a continuity is really... This was the first... I mean, this was a landmark in the respect that for the television series, this is the first time that we are in a whole new world. You know, Beast Wars and Beast Machines kind of did a nudge-nudge, wink-wink. This was part of the G1 animated series, even though it had at times more in common with the comics. But this is the first time we're really introducing, this is an alternate Transformers reality.
Right.
And so it is landmark in that respect.
The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting about it, I kind of looked at it and thought, wow, okay, so this was done by the Japanese, and I thought, it's almost like an interesting look into what they view Transformers as opposed to how the Western area kind of view it, because it almost feels in some respects a little off, because again, because of the whole mishmash of throwing everything together and, hey, we're just going to see how this works. And, you know, so I was kind of thrown by it, but at the same time, now that you guys are talking about how it's this, they were actually, this is an alternate version of, I'm like, oh, well, that makes complete and total sense then.
So, Amy, does this make you want to watch any more of Robots in Disguise? And no one will blame you if you say no.
You know, I almost want to just continue to watch a little bit just to see how much different it gets. Because, you know, obvious, you know.
Different, you guys are like, different is a good word to use.
You know, because I've always wanted to watch Armada and Energon and all that afterwards. I thought, well, how much of an effect does this have on the rest of the stuff that followed it?
We're going to have to get an Energon episode in one of these rewinds.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, that's the thing, is Robots in Disguise becomes its own contained series. Then you have the Unicron trilogy, which is its own sort of contained series, which isn't even meant to be its own contained series, but Cybertron was sort of...
There was a time where that was all the Transformers you guys were getting, so it's like, hey, you know, let's go through the pain and see what it's like.
I think that's a good point to remember, too, which, you know, in 2001, this was a brand new thing. It was a completely new universe, like we were talking about, and everybody seemed to be a lot more in favor of it at the time than it's working out going back to it now.
Well, think about it too. If you think about, I mean, again, this is another one of those times where it's good to kind of go back and think about it in terms of context, because what we had preceding it was Beast Machines. And even though that's a series that now is considered to be really good, at the time it was panned. So This idea of going to a whole new series and it's cell animated, you know, it had a lot of anticipation built up around it. That hasn't lasted. I think RID is I think probably widely considered at least equal to, if not worse than, the Unicron trilogy.
And the point I'm trying to reach with that is, in a lot of ways, to enjoy RID, I think you had to be there.
So, with us this week, we have Jim Sorensen and Bill Forster, who are the authors of the upcoming G.I. Joe Field Manual. Oh, and also the book Transformers Legacy, right?
That's correct.
Until I have it in my hand, I will never remember the title.
So, make it easy to remember?
Yeah. It is, but I have a very bad memory, which is the problem.
Yeah, you have to understand how Kilby's mind works.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. So, you were on before, and I think everyone knows what the book is, but why don't you tell us, what the current status is? I mean, where are you guys standing with this book?
Okay, well, just today, I had some conversations with my editors about how big should the book be, what should the dimensions be, what should the page count be, what format should it be in. And there's, it's a collaborative process. It goes back and forth. But I'm trying to make the book as big as I can. I'm trying to sort of go big or go home. And
we want 1,200 pages.
Well, maybe not quite. Maybe most guys don't need to be a double page spread. But we do have about 700 pieces of art either in hand or pledged from highly reliable sources.
Oh, excellent. So
quite a lot. And the vast majority of those, maybe 95%, either came from an original, a photo negative, or a transparency. And those are all analog sources that can go as big as I need them to go. So if I wanted to give, you know, I don't know, Roadhog a full page, I'd be able to do that. I probably wouldn't, but I could if I wanted to. So the more pages we get, the more singleton pieces of art on a page there's going to be, as opposed to, say, having a team on a page, which could still be quite nice. But and in some cases, that would probably be the ideal way to do it. But there's certainly some guys where you could go either way. And if we get the page count, then, you know, you'd expect to see them get, you know, a full, beautiful page all by themselves, you know, maybe just their name or a motto or something on it with them, but just the art front and center. And I'd love for IDW to know about how much demand there is. I'm telling them, I'm saying, no, guys, I assure you, you know, you can charge a lot for a high page count and people will buy it. But, I think this is true. There's no doubt in my mind. But it would be good if IDW was more comfortable with that. So certainly now would not be a bad time to go to the IDW forums and post in threads that say things like, you know, when are we getting Legacy and how big is it? And I'm really looking forward to buying it. And I'll buy three copies, even if it's hardcover and it's $75 because it's got 500 pages. You know, this would be a good time to show your support.
So to answer your question in short, we have a lot of stuff.
Is there anything that you guys are, like any holy grails that you currently don't have?
There are.
U.S. Trypticon.
Yeah, right now we don't. We have a copy of the Japanese Trypticon, the dinosaur art, beautiful and big. I could use it as big as I wanted to. But we don't actually have the finalized version of the U.S. one. I have a non-finalized piece, but not the finalized piece. Trying to get it, may get it, may not, but because I have one that's very close to the final piece, that's actually one of the very few where a scan of the box could be very helpful, because there aren't all that many differences, and I could probably, with a high-resolution scan of the box, composite that with the non-finished image I have and get a U.S. Trypticon. The other piece I'd really like to get, at least U.S.-wise, is Quick Mix, because he is the only non-action master that I don't have at all. There's some guys I have that I wish I had at a higher level of quality, like Galvatron is one of those pieces where I have, but I couldn't actually give him a full page even if I had room for him. The image I have for him is just a little too low quality.
That's okay. Nobody remembers him anyway.
Yeah, he was, I don't know. He's
a background character.
I think he was the leader of the Renegades in Season 4 or something. I'm not sure, but
you're going to make Baby Kilby cry here, guys.
Well, no. I mean, Galvatron's going in the book. If nothing else, I was speaking to the guy who painted Galvatron, and I think, I'm not sure, but I've been getting the artists to sort of share their memories with me, either as essays or interviews, and I plan to use those in the book too, which is another reason why I'd like a big page count. But I think in his talk, he actually specifically mentioned some of the techniques he used to make Galvatron. So I could always have a smaller Galvatron, you know, as big as I'd be able to, on the page with his essay, and it would feel fine. It would work organically. But
if you're out there and you have a really good high-res scan of,
if you have a negative, or if you have a transparency, or heck, if you have the original of Galvatron, certainly I'd love to hear from you. But I'd say, in terms of things that the average viewer or listener is likely to be able to help with, nice high-resolution scan of the Trypticon box and a decent resolution scan of Quick Mix would be nice. So this is, I did get far afield, but yes, aside from Action Masters, I have everyone in the U.S., except Quick Mix. So even if I had to go a little lower quality on him, just to finish out the team of the Autobot, you know, Target Master Juniors, I'd like to have that option. You know, I can't swear I'd use him, but I'd certainly like to have that option.
This is close we have to a holy grail we're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much we're missing from the U.S. and Japan, Generation 1 and Generation 2. There aren't all that many gaps. I think we're missing right now the dinosaur cassette, the W cassettes from Japan. I think that's the only Japanese art we're missing that's not, say, a repaint or a variation. Like, I have the U.S. Computron and not the Japanese Computron. It's not ideal, but I can live with that. But the dinosaur cassettes,
the dinosaur cassettes, you were just talking about this. Never mind. You go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, the problem with the dinosaur cassettes that we were just referring to is the package art is very, very small. So
yes.
we can't even work from the package art. So we're looking for some other source for that.
Yeah, because when you're scanning it in from a printed material, I was talking about the nice analog sources we had. Those you can blow up as much as you want. But if you're working from a print source, generally, you know, there's this sort of screening effect. It's all a bunch of dots.
Yeah, if you look really closely at any of those boxes,
if we want to reproduce them and have them look sharp, we have to use them a smaller size than our original source. So that's where we're with Galvatron, is we have to use the source smaller than we have. And with the cassettes, because the original sources are, you know, maybe a square inch or so, you know, maybe 4 square inches, but really tiny, we couldn't really put those in the book and have them look like they belong. And the only place we could put them would be, I mean, maybe like on a table of contents page or something. We're actually, Bill has, well, what's the term you use?
My creative crowbar. This is when Jim hands me 15 files, 15 images to fit on a page that only really can have comfortably three images. Yeah. I managed to make it look good and look professional, despite the fact that there's entirely too much on the page. The almanacs are a good example of that.
So, you know, if we do use, because I have the boxes for them and the cards that came with them, so in theory I could use them as big as they've ever appeared in print before. It's just so small that it would look bad in most places, but maybe crawling underneath the table of contents it would look okay.
So if we pull out the creative crowbar, we might be able to wedge it in there someplace.
You know, I've heard of people, and I've actually seen it, where someone has taken an image, like a painting, and then basically gone back and recreated it in vector, which would, I guess it'd be cheating, but if somebody, you know, took the time to do that, you could blow it up to the size of the moon if you wanted to.
Yeah. Oh yeah, once it's a vector image, I mean, when I say you can blow up an analog image as much as you want, that's true to a point, but it's hard to, you know, if you blew up the painting too big, you'd start to see the brush strokes and the sort of things that went into that. Whereas a vector image, you could, as you say, as big as the moon. There's no size limit there.
Oh, another thing we're looking for is UK stuff. I think we can always use a lot of UK.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that last time, and I mentioned that at BotCon, and unfortunately, we're still there. And again, I don't think that's something that most... I feel like there's a decent chance that some of your listeners probably do have a Trypticon box or a QuickMint box. You know, there's a pretty small market for people that collect the transparencies and the negatives of the originals. But while we have almost all of the U.S., at least from G1 and most of Japan, and we have quite a lot of G2, we are missing almost everything that originated in Europe. We have... maybe, I think, fewer than half a dozen pieces at this point. So,
which kind of bothers us a little bit, because we have a lot of... our work has a lot of fans from the UK.
Yeah.
So I think they're in auto assembly this weekend, this upcoming weekend, isn't it?
Real soon.
So it's nice. But we have a lot of UK fans of our work, so we'd like to be able to represent them in some way, you know?
Yeah, and then right now, I have a couple pieces, so I probably... Maybe not a chapter, but I could at least have a page or something.
Well, it'll be represented. We'd just like it to be as...
But I'd love to be comprehensive. And the funny thing is, when I set out to do this, I never really thought we'd get to the point where we could even consider being comprehensive. And now we're starting to get to the point where we really can. Where if we were to get, you know, if I had a good source of Action Masters, you know, I could pretty much close the gap and say, yes, for US G1, we have everything.
Yeah,
that's a nice place to be.
John, one of our co-hosts, he actually has a Trypticon box that he says is in good shape, so we may see if that one will work. He'll look at it.
Anybody who's looking to reach us, by the way, can reach us at transformerstheark@yahoo.com, and obviously ARK is ARK.
Yeah. I have a pretty good, I mean, I don't have any original art, unfortunately, but you probably already have it, but I have a pretty good Thunderclash package if you got desperate and needed like a scan of that, so.
Well, you know, the thing is, generally we can't really work from the package art. The Quick Mix and Trypticon are definitely the exceptions and not the rule, just because when we're... We want to maintain a uniform and very high level of quality throughout. And when you're working with the packages, it's really hard to do that. You have to do a lot of touch-up and restoration, even under the best of circumstances. Like we've had some people send us high-resolution scan of proof cards. Now, proof cards, you know, they've never been on a shelf. They don't have any... residue on it. A lot of times they don't even have all the words on it, so it's a pretty sharp image. But even then, just having the print artifacts is a challenge for us to grapple with, and for pieces like that we can't use them all that big.
It only works with Trypticon and Grypnex because we have other material that we can amalgamate it in and restore with.
Yeah, and it doesn't even really work for Quickmix. It's just that because he's the only one, I could kind of, in my mind, justify having, you know, him be a third of a page. I mean, I probably, even if I had you know, sort of an arbitrarily high page count, I probably wouldn't give each Target Master Junior a page all to themselves. You know, I mean, I probably wouldn't be advocating a 700-page book.
How dare you?
I would take a 700-page book.
I'm just saying, you know, something like the IDW Premier Edition hardcover, that was 500 pages, and that's really thick. That was a $75 book or a $100 book. I mean, that would be, you know, if we were to go 500 pages, that would be around the price point we're talking. That's pretty big. We'd probably go a little, or, you know, quite a bit smaller than that. But I'd like to go, you know, if I have my way, I'd go certainly well up from the 200 or so pages that we usually work with. Because we certainly, I feel like the ideal number of pages, pieces per page is somewhere from 1 to 3. So, you know, since we have 700 pages, you know, you can do the math. 200 just isn't enough.
Yeah.
Do you think this is something you might end up having to go to multiple volumes on?
You know, it's always a possibility, and because we're still going back and forth with our editors, trying to find the price point and the page count and the dimensions that make sense, I don't want to take that idea completely off the table.
That's certainly what we've done for G.I. Joe and for the Ark and for the Almanacs, so that might happen, but I think ideally we'd like to just have a great big book.
Yeah, I have a strong sense as to how it should be organized. And it won't work over 2 volumes. I mean, in theory it could, but it's sort of roughly chronological. And I really don't, as much as I feel like the interest is there and the demand is strong, I don't think 2 $50 books, one of which covers, say, 1984 to 1988, and the other which covers 89 through 94, I just don't think that second volume would sell that well.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather... I mean,
it's hard not to front-load them, so all the good stuff is in the beginning.
I mean, there's other ways you could break it, and you'd have to. If I could get... If the only way I could do the book was in 2 volumes, we'd have to consider something like Autobots and Decepticons, or Alphabetical, or something else. And generally, I feel like chronological is just stronger. And it's not just because it feels better, because right now our thought on the page breaks, the chapter headers, is to use the murals, or in some cases the sort of logos, like the Pretender logo that they had. So
if it's an alphabetical order, where do we put that material?
Yeah.
So we have to change our way of thinking entirely from the ground up.
Yeah, and we have those nice essays from the artist, and I think they'll work better if we slot them in sort of roughly chronologically. So I'd rather stick to 1 volume, but I'm sure we could make it work with 2. I'm sure an Autobot and a Decepticon volume could work pretty well and be pretty cool. And then we'd find a way to make it work. But if I had to choose between 2 240-page books and 1 480-page book, I'd choose the 1 480-page book.
Yeah.
Will you be including anything that's not necessarily toys, like maybe some like the couple of games that came out, game art, or not accessories, but like licensed merchandising art that might have appeared?
The race car set, right?
I'm not actually sure where we're falling with that, but the short answer is yes. We have some material that's not just toys. We have some catalog art that's sort of in a similar style. We're trying to get some puzzle artwork that's in a similar style.
Awesome.
And I'm trying to think. There might be one or two other sort of miscellaneous pieces like that, where it's not technically, you know, a Transformers toy, but it's something that's in that style and works with the aesthetic. So yes. If we have room, we're planning to do it. We have some pieces like that already.
Hey, could you sort of change gears for a second and tell us a little bit about the G.I. Joe Field Manual, because I'm very interested in that.
The G.I. Joe Field Manual, we literally, I'm looking at them. We have boxes and boxes and boxes of hard copies of character models. We are we're very proud of it. It came out pretty well. It should be in 2 volumes. We're going to see how the first one sells. But that one, what do we want to say about that?
Well, it's going to be out, I believe, the tail end of August, maybe the very beginning of September. It covers both the G.I. Joe miniseries and the first season. And we have a ton of extras and bonus material. So it's going to feel... I'd say a little bit denser, if possible, than the ARC books, for those of you who are familiar with that. One of the reasons is that we...
Which is the format.
Yeah, we went in a little bit more of a design-heavy format. So the pages, I think, you know, it's not just sort of the image on a blank page. There's sort of a military-looking grid background, and we have some character quotes and some information about the characters and vehicles. So that gives it a little bit of extra value add. But then beyond just all the... We have, I believe, we have every main character... toy character from both miniseries and season one. I think we have every toy vehicle that did show up. You know, there's a few that didn't show up ever, but not too many. Some of them only showed up in commercials, and we have those. Mm-hmm. So it's quite comprehensive. And then we have a lot of sort of bonus material, extra characters that showed up in only one episode. So I think that stuff is pretty neat. Bill did a really cool-looking page that has sort of an Egyptian motif. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. I have a little bit. I'm a little bit of an Egyptophile. So we had characters that were based on the Egyptian gods from a particular episode, and I think I had a lot of fun with that one. But we think it looks really good. We have a very unique look to it, as opposed to that's very different from the ARC books, and it has sort of a grid format. And I think it looks pretty sharp. And what's more is, we were talking a moment ago about putting two books together and having to balance out characters so that, you know, your books aren't front-loaded. The first book doesn't have all the characters like Optimus Prime and Duke and things like that. And your second book has all the secondary characters. We managed to balance it out enough that if there's a second volume, which I hopefully there will be.
I'm pretty sure we will.
Pretty sure there will be.
Yes.
There's still a lot of very unique and very cool stuff in that. To kind of justify
Well, one of the things that helped us with that was there's the Cobra-thon episode where Cobra has a telethon to try and raise money, and all the Cobra leadership shows up in their fancy clothing. So we have all of those models, and rather than have them under, you know, say the Cobra Commander or the Destro page, we save them all for the second book. So the Cobra leadership all shows up in the second book, and they're all, you know, wearing tuxedos and evening gowns, and they look really sharp, so that's fun. And there's a few other characters. Well, actually, many of the main characters, many of the really prominent early characters, do show up in the second book. Roadblock has a new costume. Storm Shadow has a new costume. I think Snake Eyes is one of the few that didn't. But Lady J shows up with some new gear in the second book. And we have a bunch of the models from Deke, so that got characters in, like, Duke. Maybe even Storm Shadow. I don't quite remember
that.
Stuff.
We just got back proofs for the cover for the new cover for the volume one. And it looks pretty sharp. It has Duke on it with the big American flag, and so it's a lot of fun.
Very patriotic.
Yeah, very cool.
That's exciting. I'm very much looking forward to that. I have my pre-order up, and can't wait to get that one.
I was at Comic-Con this weekend, and just as a guest walking around, and at least three people walked up to me asking me about it, so I think there's some hype for it. So we're very much looking forward to it, and I hope it does pretty well.
Yeah, and I had at least two different IDW editors at the SDCC come up to me during a conversation and say, oh, by the way, I saw the galleys for the field manual. That looks great. Or when's Volume 2 coming out? And I said, oh, I think we're shooting for January or February on that one, so it'll be fun. And oddly... I said it was a dense book and we had a lot of extras, but we had even more. I think there's only one episode in the second season that I didn't have the model suite from. So while season one, there are some gaps, you know, there's some outfits I don't have and some guest stars I don't have. In season two, everyone's there. So I think all I'm missing was Raven, the Night Raven pilot, who had a little adventure with Slipstream in the penultimate episode.
And for fun, and I got to be a little mysterious about this, for fun, as a way to promote it, me and my girlfriend, Jillian, came up with a way to promote the book a little bit. And if you follow me on Facebook, you'll see a video in a couple of weeks promoting the book. So cool. That'll be fun. I got to be mysterious about it, but it's fun and it's interesting.
No, it's a really sort of like way out of this world idea. You'll find it. Fun.
So I have one more question. I don't know if anyone else does, but as far as season one goes, you said that you're missing some. Was one of the episodes that you have, do you have Cold Slither?
Yes.
Yes!
That's what matters.
In fact, there's a whole There's a whole Cold Slither page with them dressed up as the band members. And I think I mentioned that we had quotes and sometimes vehicle specs or character information, like their SN numbers. For the Cold Slither page, we just put the lyrics to the song on there.
So it was kind of an interesting page because we laid it out and we passed it back and forth several times because each one of our layouts were like, no, this isn't good enough. No, this isn't good. Until we had it perfect, it just kept going back and forth between our two desks.
And this doesn't show up on the Cold Slither page, but on the pages for Scarlet, Covergirl and Lady J, each individually, they all have multiple outfits, and one of them is them dressed up as groupies. So you get that too.
Very cool. Awesome. Yep. Any other questions, guys?
I got a question about Legacy. Have you managed to attribute all the art, or are there some that are just where the artist is just just a mystery still?
Well, Jim's tracked down a lot of the artists. I don't know if you can place each one to each piece.
Yeah, I haven't really attempted that. I'm considering doing it, but it's tricky because I haven't gotten in touch with every artist. So I think either I'll be able to attribute everything, or 98% of them, or I think having 50% of them or so attributed would be awkward and mess up the layout of the book. But since I am speaking to them, when I can identify, and it's also hampered by the fact that the artists don't always remember what they did. And nobody really was keeping track.
That's surprising.
Most of them, if I show them a picture, will recognize their own work or not. But some of them, they're saying, "I think this one is mine, but I'm not sure." So that's hard to attribute to. But the ones that they're unambiguously sure on, what I'm thinking to do is if the artist is someone who I've had a conversation with and has contributed maybe an essay to the book or an interview to the book, I'll put together a little bio and I can say, Artist X is graduated from the Pittsburgh School of Art in 1979 and is responsible for, among other things, the Constructicons and Triptychon, that sort of thing.
Yeah, makes sense.
Awesome.
As much as I'm able to, I'd like, if I could attribute, again, if I get to the point where it's 90, 95%, then I'd think that for every piece of art I'd try and attribute it. Some of that also depends on the page count, because if it's a book where most pieces are standalone, then it's easier and it visually makes more sense to attribute that piece. Whereas if most pieces are, say, 3 or 4 or 5 pieces per page, if it's, the protective bots on a page and then the throttle bots on a page, and not all members of a team are done by the same person, in that case, I think it's a little harder to do attributions and have it make sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you very much for being on. Anything you want to mention before we depart?
I guess the only other thing I'd want to mention is that in addition to all the great artwork that we have that was published or on a package or on a catalog or something like that, we also have gotten at this point round about 30, maybe a little bit more, maybe a hair less, pieces that never actually were used on a package, or maybe were only used on a package prototype. So quite a bit of the artwork is something that either you've never seen or maybe you saw on eBay as a thumbnail when someone auctioned off the Protect-A-Bots for $700 or $800, or I don't remember how much. They maybe went for a couple $1,000s a piece. But I have all of that art too, so you'll get a chance to see that, not on some crappy little eBay thumbnail image that somebody saved 4 years ago.
Nice.
I have a lot of those somewhere.
You have a lot of G2 Protect-A-Bots?
I have a lot of crappy little thumbnails that I have saved to my hard drive of like prototype images and art that on eBay, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah. Okay, guys, thank you very much. That is Bill Forster and Jim Sorensen. I'm switching it there. I always mention Jim first, but Bill does half the work, so he deserves half the credit.
Yeah, I deserve more than half. Just don't.
Three quarters of the credit.
Jim's just the front man. Yeah,
it's true. All I do is track down all the yard and lay it out and clean it up.
When was the last time?
I write my name in the Congress. Well.
When was the last time that Jim got a tattoo on national television? I mean, I can't remember that ever happening, so.
No. How it works is when there's a panel, Jim does it. When there's somebody to speak to, Jim takes care of it. When there's an interview, Jim takes care of it. When there's a bunch of needles need to be jabbed into your chest, then I get to step in front of the cannon.
just out of curiosity, how many times do people recognize you for that? Has it happened?
From the tattoo?
Yes.
Every once in a while, it's off and on. I don't think. One time, I used to work in an airport, and people used to spot me every once in a while because there's a lot of people coming through. And two times I remember specifically is I remember a cop chasing me down on the street, and he worked at the airport, and he stopped me and said, "I know you did this tattoo, and I have your book," and all this other stuff, which was really weird.
Wow.
And another time I had a woman come up to me and say, "My son," and she pointed across the airport and pointed to this young kid and said, "My son thinks that you're some sort of Transformers person." And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Did you get a tattoo?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Oh, can I have your autograph?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm really not anybody special, you know?" She goes, "No." So they got a business card, and I drew a little bumblebee for him. So every once in a while it happens, but people don't quite know what I do, or they just remember me vaguely.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've wondered that for ever since I saw that episode. I'm like, oh man, that's... Yeah, I couldn't do it. Definitely.
You know what I thought about that episode? They asked me, why did you choose Victory Leo? And I went into this long, long story about why specifically I chose Victory Leo. And they edited it down, so now if you watch the episode, it says, "Why did you choose Victory Leo?" And I respond, "Well, he turns into a robot in a spaceship and a lion." And
I thought it was because it was the cover of the book.
I'm sorry, what?
I thought it was because it was used as the cover of the book. Wasn't it used as the cover of one of the editions of the arc?
It was because we used it as a cover of the book, but there was a whole... When they asked me, I gave it this whole explanation about how it was the evolution of a character, and on the first book we used Galvatron, who used to be Megatron, and I just went into this long speech, and then they cut me down to a little soundbite.
Well, the lesson there is, when they ask you questions, give them a soundbite answer. Why did you pick this image? It's the cover of my book.
Yes.
Yeah. True that.
And on that note, soundbites, if you have a Trypticon box or a Quick Mic box, get in touch with us. And if you'd like to see this book and you'd like to see it big, post on the IDW forums.
Yeah, there's a lot of Transformers, so a lot of digital Transformers. And I read 81...
It was good?
It's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's for me, but it's okay.
Well, I'll tell you about 81. I've not been hyped for this project because, I said it before, this is now the fourth timeline splinter that follows up after number 80. Simon Furman wrote two of the others, and original artists illustrated two of the others, and one of them was even published by the company that published the first series. So I don't consider this to be any more legitimate or official or real a continuation, especially since when you read 81 and you see how many ideas have crept in from IDW, like Cup on the Wreckers, Magnus is a Bureaucrat, Bludgeon trying to recreate Thunderwing, it just punctuates the fact that this comic is, despite what it may claim, not what would have happened 20 years ago. And no. I think that I don't understand what the point of picking up the series is if you're not going to tell the stories you were going to tell. I mean, I would understand leaving out G2. I'm still annoyed about that, especially because they jump forward 20 years, and it annoys me that they're leaving out G2, and really annoys me that they're leaving out the UK stuff, as if that would cause some kind of problem. You just don't reference it directly if you're worried about your audience not having heard about it. You just write around it without directly referencing it. But I don't know why they if they were going back and just telling the stories that they had planned to tell, if the book hadn't been cancelled, I would I would be down with that. I'd be okay with that. But it's obvious that aside from a reference to Nucleon, and it seems like they will be following up what he intended to do there, they're not, and that annoys me. So, you know, I was reading the issue, nothing was blowing my mind about it. Just all these little IDW continuity filter-ins were pulling me out of it. Got to those last couple of pages. And I was like, I was saying to myself, it's like, if you're not going to do what you were going to do back then, at least go big or go home. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then it's like, oh, Soundwave had the deluxe Insecticons, and look, there's the Sky Scorchers.
So you're not even giving them credit for doing it, huh?
Yeah. No, but then, we get to the last couple of pages, and that son of a bitch went big, and it was enough to definitely catch my attention. And make me excited to read at least some more of this.
Yeah, really. Now, the last few pages, the wheels really came off. It was like, oh,
yeah, totally. You were like, oh, damn, I guess maybe there are no rules in this.
Yeah, that's when it actually became worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. But here's the thing, okay? Let's all just cast our minds back and... And how was it that the G2 comic series ended again? Was it that there was peace on Cybertron and Earth was devastated?
Except without the peace on Cybertron part.
There was peace on Cybertron.
I don't think they really addressed that directly.
Optimus Prime made a lovely speech and everyone stood around. There was peace on Cybertron.
Okay.
It lasted
for 5 whole minutes.
Yeah, and that's where this begins. And I'm like, why did you skip G2 if your setup follows on from that directly? I'm still annoyed about skipping G2. We had G181, and its name was Generation 2 Number 1.
Mm-hmm. A diecast folding cover is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I love G2. I love G2 a little too much.
Yeah, but we're getting that awesome Bruticus because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
Yep. God, I love that cover. What does it say? This is not your father's Autobot?
Yep. What?
Awesome. Yeah.
What the f***? What is this? I don't know.
Hey, those sell for like $5.
Pennies on the dollar.
If you bought one of those back in the day and you still own it, it's nice. Almost worth
more. You could light a fire with that.
Like, light it on fire.
That's
the joke.
It's worth less than half than what it actually cost. It was originally, what, $2.99?
Yeah. Oh, it couldn't have been. Hang on.
I think it was. It had a cardboard cover, die cast.
$2.95, actually. But seriously, no, crap. Really, in 1992?
Yeah. Regular comics are going for $1.25. So that was like more than twice a premium on it.
But look how shiny.
Yay, shiny. Oh, my God.
But, you know, let's not knock G2, because G2 Bruticus, hello.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I'm, like, really excited that I'm going to own that.
Yeah, it's like, as soon as I saw that package, that changed from the version I was settling for, because I couldn't get the G1 game accurate version, to the one I want.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to give the box babies. I want to, like, marry the box.
Gonna make sour cream with the box.
I want to settle down with this.
Little tiny cartons.
Where did all of these boxes come from?
Yeah, X-Men and I
could never find a box when you're looking for one, so that'd be a handy thing.
There's got to be an even better joke there with boxes
and sour cream
We've only seen the actual design of the box, so we don't know what the insert's going to look like. I'm hoping that it's molded plastic so that I can put the toys
in it.
Yeah, I know. It'll probably be twist ties and crap, which means I'm going to have to leave the toys in the box.
Mm-hmm.
To do is what I'm going to do, which is take the toys out of the box, cherish them lovingly, and hang the box on the wall as a trophy.
Maybe I'll get two boxes. Maybe I'll get two of them. One to open and one to
keep. Of course you will.
This is the same guy who yesterday was trying to tell me that he wasn't going to buy the breakdown that I showed him. And yet he's going to buy...
I don't understand.
I still say my favorite Brian story is when we went to the secondhand game store here in town. And he was like a kid in a candy store running around grabbing games. Come to find out, like, three-quarters of the games that he was buying, he already owned.
Boxes, though.
They had, they were in the box.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You know, I was thinking to myself there last week, I'm a little behind on my RFC, but when Hasbro trademarked combiners, I figured you must have been having a laugh riot.
I mean, that's awesome.
A panic attack, one of the two.
I don't get duplicates of everything. I mean,
I wasn't referring to duplicates. I was referring to past instances of combiner theory.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they usually suck, but I still love them. I love the concept. It's the one thing that Transformers does well, but it just doesn't do it that often.
And then it turned out it was Creons, which are the best thing ever.
Love,
no,
yes.
No, and you know, okay, they're doing four different versions of Brutus Kid. If those like don't sell miserably, I think we can expect to see more later on in that vein too.
I'm just talking about Creons, man.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm just saying we can probably expect more mainline combiners too. They have the trademark. They apparently have the engineering to do it well.
They have the technology. They can build them.
Well, we need to get these things in hand yet till we actually see if all
better,
this
faster.
All this whining about the look and shape of Bruticus, if somebody we could actually get it in hand and review the thing.
Have you seen that picture though?
Which one?
There was a picture posted earlier of like a better looking transformation.
Hit me.
Yeah, in the Skype chat, McFeely.
There you go.
And then you look at it now.
I have a note there too.
Yeah, that is essentially what I have always assumed it's supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to do what it's able to look like. I mean, it looked like Blastoff could fold up.
Yes, exactly.
But I think the reason that it has never been shown that way is because it was built with elbow articulation in mind, so they left it down.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Yeah, and the instructions also tell you to develop it like that. So, you know, the interns took the pictures and posed them.
No, the instructions actually do tell you to leave it folded up like that.
No, they don't. Because when we bought the set for the Bruticus set for Comic-Con, and then we took pictures of it, those guys are usually, the guy who took the picture, Steve, he's actually pretty good in terms of, like, transforming it correctly and everything. So he still had the arms just like the way they are in the, like, all the other press shots. So
it's the
instructions that are telling him to do it that way.
Or he was mimicking the box art.
I'm not sure which one. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. So,
but unsurprisingly, it turns out that with one tug in the same direction that everybody thought it could be tugged, it looks better. And looks fantastic, actually. Fantastic is what it looks like. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it looks great this way, and I am really anxious for somebody to mess with the brawl arm to see if they can make that look better, too.
Well, that looks like that's supposed to... That one looks like it's supposed to actually form a really big shoulder and then have an arm actually coming out underneath it instead of a mass of tank.
Yeah, this definitely looks like... Yeah, it definitely looks a lot tighter. It definitely looks like they were supposed to do it this way. Maybe it's like somebody screwed up or something. Because this makes him look less of an ape and more of a...
Yeah.
I mean, I was not down on this Bruticus anyway, even if the arms were stuck that way. But, you know, everything more that's being seen of it, since people are getting them, and we're seeing different combinations and stuff, I'm just getting happier and happier for this. They're really... It looks like they really took the concept and got it down.
A routine patrol with four bats and chases. He's later awoke in the strangest of places. Earth was their home, now and in addition, Optimus Prime gave them this.
Hello, we're back once again with a short mini review of Rescue Bots. I am Amy.
Hi, I'm Nick.
And we are reviewing very quickly this last week's episode, which is Transformers Rescue Bots, The Lost Bell. And what the best way to explain this episode is it's Castaway meets The Goonies and Rescue Bots.
And they did a great job
mashing them all together.
They did. Amazingly enough, they just threw it all together. They had subplot, they had plot, and they did it all in 22 minutes. It was great.
I know.
Oh.
It was so much fun. It was like a little adventure.
Yeah.
Just so much fun.
Yeah, so basically the story starts out with Cody tells him about this lost bell that was lost, and a pirate stole it. And then this storm comes in, and they go off to go help prepare the island for the storm, and then a little accident happens, and Cody and the bots get washed out into the sea and away from the island, which is still getting hit by the storm. And then they find another island and are washed up on shore, and while they're there, they find the pirate ship with the bell
and the treasure that's aboard.
Exactly. And then at the very end, they take the ship and they go home, and all of the good stuff happens. So,
yeah, it's very Goonie-esque, and I loved it because I love the Goonies.
Oh yes. I have to say, to date, this is probably one of my favorite episodes because they did. I was laughing through almost the whole thing. Just the little things.
Oh my gosh!
The fact that they go off and they're supposed to be taking care of Cody, and Cody's pretty much taking care of himself. They just need he just needs supervision. That's it. And then the fact that Blades and Chase get scared by a puffin out in the middle of the forest.
That was so funny. Oh my gosh! And it's just. It was just like this little comedy of errors, and it was perfect. It was so much fun.
And we also get an opportunity to, in this episode, Danny gets a guy that she kind of blushes at several times.
Another little love interest in the Burns family.
Yeah.
It's still not the chief, but we're getting there, I think. We're getting
closer, yeah. But yes,
Danny
just deserves
to have a good-looking guy like that, you know, that has the same interest as her. He's a pilot. She's a pilot. You know, things could work.
And, you know, he was helping to find her brother, so, you know, that's kind of nice.
Well, it was because of him, though, that Blades couldn't fly because, Blades,
because
don't want to give too much away.
Yeah,
but.
But the other thing that I wanted to mention, too, is the fact that we actually see both Chase and Blades grinning from ear to ear in this episode, and because they make a makeshift house, but then it falls down, and then like, aww. But I had to point out, it's
so
creepy to see Chase smile like that, because it's like, it's really weird. It's funny.
Oh,
just looks having a smile plastered across his face sometimes can be a little weird.
Oh, there's just so many fun things, and again, watching it for the second time around, there was a lot of little things in the background. You're like, oh. Yep. I mean, Blades talks a lot under his breath in this episode, and he has some of the funniest lines. You've got to watch over and over again because, oh, it's so funny.
Oh, yeah.
So much fun.
And Pirate Blades comes back, too, in this.
Yes,
so.
Pirate's Blade. Our matey.
Oh, it's just so much win. So if anybody gets a chance to watch this episode, you definitely have to. And then jump over to the Underbase, where the Rescue Center is reviewed with a full, complete, and total review of our review of this episode. So
we'll pick it apart, and we'll love it even more.
Yeah, so. And we'll give you all the nitty-gritty details. So
yes.
Yeah. And that'll be
a camping adventure, and I love it.
Yep, it'll be awesome. So, and that'll be our quick review of this episode. So we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye. I know. I do love that episode.
This is
a good episode. Love Deep Trouble. I don't know, but this is probably my second favorite.
Yeah. They did a really good job with it. Like I said, if I'm sitting here laughing, not every once in a while, but almost every little thing that they do, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best ever. Okay.
When he gets, you know, that crab caught onto him.
Oh yeah. And then he tosses
it onto the heat wave.
He knocks Heatwave, and he's like, ah! And he drops down, and like he's trying to get eggs, because he's probably covered with them now.
Oh, God.
Oh, this is so funny. Oh, my gosh. And when they fell down the hole, I thought, oh, my gosh, it's so totally Goonies!
I know.
I was like, I bet they're going to ride that thing out of here, because it's all, you know, all the boulders. I was like, oh, my gosh. If they ever wanted to make the ending any more awesome, it would have been the kids on that boat, floating out of there, and they got to do it in Rescue Bots. It's like, yes!
I love how the Rescue Bots are doing, like, the whole kind of movie reference. I think they're doing it for the adults that watch.
Probably, but still, it's just, it's too awesome that they're doing that. I'm completely and totally thrilled. So, yeah. It was really great because, like, the, you know, we got a nice hotel and all of that. And so it was really great. And I also got a pass to San Diego Comic-Con, which was even better because I was like, oh, yay, I get to go to there. And I got to be there for about a day. But the best part, of course, was going to High Moon and actually seeing the tour and, you know, reviewing the game. So I got to play the campaign for a little bit. We saw more of the campaign at High Moon when they actually kind of showed us what was going on. I got to see several characters. That evening I got to go and play multiplayer, and I got to play Deathmatch, Conquest, Escalation, and then I also got to play a little bit of the campaign there as well. It was really, really great. You guys have any questions that I can answer, or, you know?
Well, tell us about the campaign mode. I mean, what are some of the differences between it, maybe, say, in the previous game, or what are your thoughts on it?
Campaign mode. The first one that you're going to go through is the Bumblebee campaign, the Bumblebee chapter. Let me back up there. I think there's going to be about 11 chapters, and the only reason why I know that is the numbers that were on the game, and then they had this timeline at High Moon that was like all down this this wall, and there I think there were 11 that I counted.
There's achievements that appears to be hang on a second. 16, I think.
Oh, 16. Yeah. Okay.
So.
16 chapters?
I'm sorry. Oh my god.
I thought I heard 13.
Yeah, 13. You're right. Yeah, it was the 13 chapters and then the final chapter. Yeah, so 13.
All right, so I could have miscounted, so it's all right, though. I wasn't exactly sure on that, so. The first one, basically, is Bumblebee, and it's kind of like a tutorial. The thing is they made it very story-oriented, so it's like I didn't feel like it was kind of like, oh, wait, this is the tutorial level. That's not going to really give me anything. No, actually, it does start everything, and they made it make sense, so it wasn't like, oh, that's lame. You know, no, it was actually, you play Bumblebee, and you have a few things that you've got to do to help Optimus Prime and such. And it was like it was a flash forward, because after you get to the end of that, then it says, you know, 6 Earth days earlier. And so I'm guessing that you start out this so that you kind of know where it's working up to, and then you get all the backstory, and then you probably are going to, I'm not sure how it's going to, like, meet up in the end, because I didn't get to see the end, obviously. But I liked how it was. It felt really story. Like, if anybody was saying that the story wasn't really story-ish, then, you know, I think that that's what it's going to, I think it's going to get better in this edition of...
Was Bumblebee talking?
No. Yeah. They make it pretty clear within the first minute of the game that he has sustained damage and he does not talk.
I was wondering if maybe the chapter is going to show how it happened, like that was going to happen at the end of the chapter or something, maybe.
No, at this point, Bumblebee has already sustained the damage that caused him not to talk. So
then again, it is 6 days early, 6 days later than, you know.
True. It could be later on in the game. I really don't know because I didn't get to see all of it. I just got to see all of the Bumblebee chapter. So. I got to see the Starscream chapter only a little bit. They showed us how the gameplay was on that in a specific area, because they talked about how in this game they've made options so that if you have, like, if you find that you like to do this type of gameplay, they have options where you can shoot from one area, go to another place, shoot from another area, go back under everything, and, you know, come back and forth. And or if you want, you can fly right up, jump down, shoot a bunch of people, get back up and fly away. I mean, there's lots. They gave a lot of options, and I really liked how that was, because, you know, some people will find that they like doing this as opposed to that, And so you will have options within the gameplay to do different things. I also got to see the Optimus Prime level. I also got to see the Jazz level with the repelling gun or whatever that he uses, and it was kind of fun to see that. They demonstrated a little bit of how it works. I really liked it. I thought it was pretty fun, so it looked pretty smooth. I didn't get to play it, unfortunately, but it was really fun to see Jazz using his gun. And then we also got to see Grimlock. With Grimlock, he pretty much, and if you've had a chance to look at my review, they basically called him a Hulk, and they were not kidding. he's got his own weapons, everything about him is just completely unique, and quite literally, he works up a rage meter, and you have ultimate control over this rage meter. So if you get in, you work up the rage meter, and you can engage it. You can engage it for as long as you want, and then and it will start working down. But if you get halfway through the rage meter and decide that you don't want to use it anymore, you can disengage it, and then it'll have to build right back up, and then you can engage it again. So you can use it to manage how you want to use it in the gameplay. If you find that you're out of bad guys to go rage on, then you can turn it off, work it back up, and then re-engage it again. So it was quite unique. I was very impressed with that. I thought, wow, that'll really help a lot of people that want to be frustrated by, oh crap, I just, the last wave is here and I'm wasting everything that I just built up. So yeah. I also saw the Megatron chapter later on when I went to the multiplayer play that evening, because they only let us see a small chapter of it, though, because to get too far into it starts revealing stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. But yeah, it was really good to have a chance to play him as well. And I really don't know all of the other characters that you can play in campaign, because, like I said, those are the ones that I saw, but I'm sure that there are more, because, like I said, that whole timeline, there were lots of characters on there, and I'm guessing that you can play several of them. I don't think that you can play as Metroplex, though, if anybody's wondering about that. So
yeah, I think I had heard that you couldn't.
Yeah, he will be the supporting character for Optimus Prime.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, Optimus Prime controls him, so he basically does, he helps out Optimus Prime on that level, so it'll be good. I'm sure that you can play as Bruticus.
I put that can on the high shelf. Can you get that for me?
And he just crashes into everything.
It's like, aww. Bumblebee's going to have to clean this up. but yeah, I think that's all the campaign. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I didn't...
Since you played as Megatron.
I did.
Okay.
Just for a small portion, that, like I said, we went to the multiplayer gameplay that evening, and they had a campaign set up on four different computers. And so I got a chance to jump in there and play both Megatron and Bumblebee, and I did the whole Bumblebee chapter because it was the tutorial chapter, but I liked it. It was really good. And then I also played Megatron, but only for a small section. The guy was just there waiting.
Each of the characters that you played in campaign and multiplayer, do they feel very similar to like War for Cybertron? Like, do they all have like a distinct
movement
feel to it?
Yeah, the movement it feels somewhere between what I'd say Fall of War for Cybertron and Dark of the Moon. If you've played them both, then you'll know what I'm talking about. It's not as fast and fluid as War for Cybertron, but it's not as frustrating as Dark of the Moon, where it was blocky and jerky. It's what I say somewhere in between. I could definitely tell when I was playing it that it was definitely different than War for Cybertron. But I was starting to kind of get in the groove by that evening of, how to use it and how to make it move. You do have one ability that's unique to the character. Everybody has dash, so that's good that everybody has the same you know, you only have one power that's unique to that character. And you've got options to, you know, to pick. Like, the customization is mostly what you're going to be using in the multiplayer. And there are lots of, I mean, you had lots of options. You could change the way that you looked. You could change your weapons. You could change the powers that, some of the powers that you could use, depending on, like, they had a few that you could select, but not all, you know. It's not as much as, like, say, the physical customization that you can do with the characters. So that was interesting that they had that. And I think there was one other option, and I can't recall which one it was. Let's see. I can't think of another thing to say. Anybody have another question?
I don't know if anybody else does.
I know so little about video game play anymore than I feel.
I mean, I edited the article, so I kind of, it was kind of like...
Yeah, I just pulled up my article and kind of browsed through it real quick before I started. So, let's see, what else is that you can do on multiplayer? Something that I haven't had a chance to talk about yet, because I know a lot of people out there, if they're listening, will want to know this. If you can play the Dinobots or the Insecticons in multiplayer... And I don't know a lot of details about it, but apparently you can. He found out about this that night, and I asked before I left if I was allowed to say anything about it, and they said yes, all the embargoes are off, so I can talk about stuff. At least that's what Calvin said, so hoping that that's the case. But yes, you will be able to play as Grimlock or possibly one of the other Dinobots. Matt Teager didn't say how he knew. He was like, I don't know how they did this, but I just found out, and he announced it that evening, that you will be able to play possibly all of the Dinobots and some of the Insecticons. So,
okay, so is it a new class, or is it just cosmetic design and things like that?
It's cosmetic design. Okay. You will be able to design your own character to look like one of those characters and play them. Now, I don't know about whether or not you're going to have the same abilities or not. I don't know any of that information. Again, it just came out that night. He said I didn't know how they can do it, but they figured out how to do it. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be stuff that you're going to be able to unlock as you play the game. Okay. I think I remember them saying something like that. So, I mean, when you start out multiplayer, you're not going to be able to have all the options. You're going to, as you play the game, you will unlock stuff so that you'll have complete and total control over everything that you can do in multiplayer. But it's stuff that you will unlock as well. See, I also played Deathmatch and Conquest and Escalation, and I don't remember how many maps. They did say that they had maps, and I do believe that they will eventually have downloadable material that you can also increase maps or whatnot. I'm really not sure what their download material is going to be. When I asked Matt, he said that he wasn't even sure what they had in the works, so it was kind of cool. Let's see. Multiplayer. We only got to see a couple of maps. I think one happened to be in the city. The Rust kind of aesthetic, which was kind of cool. The Conquest is still the same, where you go and capture the nodes. Team Deathmatch is still the same, from what I could gather. I think you have Team Deathmatch and then just Deathmatch. Escalation, they're a little bit more specific about how they are doing the game. With that, you got four character types like you did in the past. You've got one ability that is available for each of these. The scouts are going to have this type of ability, and all of they have four different categories. They're not called the same as they were in War for Cybertron. I can't remember all of what they called them, the different body types. But you're going to have basically a munitioner that's going to drop ammunition, a healer that's going to be able to heal everybody, the shield who's going to be able to put up a shield so that you can get people behind it there, you know, and you can shoot through the shield. you're bad. The bad guys can't shoot you, but you can shoot them, which was, I'm really glad they fixed that because it was kind of frustrating. You put up the shield, you're like, well, I can't shoot them and they can't shoot me.
Right.
So now you can shoot through it. If it's your shield, you can shoot through it, but they can't shoot through it. I was like, oh, yes, I'm really happy about that. And then the last one is the Protector, who has this little automated turret that kind of follows you around called the Clutch, and it doesn't just stay in one place. It follows you wherever you go, and it shoots things. So, I mean, I think on Escalation it does stay put, but in the game it does follow you around. And let's see here. I played the Munitioner and I played the Healer, and they said that I was, you know, one of the guys said, well, you're probably one of the best healers that we've had all night. So I was like, hey. But I got to play Perceptor, and I saw Wheeljack in Escalation. So I was pretty thrilled about that. I was like, I don't know what he plays as, but I was just looking over the shoulder of somebody else, and I was like, there's Wheeljack. It's like, cool. So it was pretty fun to see that. So then I know those characters are in there. I know there's going to be a ton of questions that people are going to have, and I'm barely scratching the surface of everything that I got a chance to do there. It was just really fun to hang out. So anybody have any other questions? I think this is the most I've ever talked on Reader Review Cybertron.
Sounds like you covered it all.
Yeah.
Awesome. She did a really good job. She wrote some pretty hefty pieces, so
yes.
Definitely.
And I can't wait to play more of it. I mean, you know, when it comes out, I'll be like, play this as fast as I can, and I'll write another one if I have to. So, yeah, it worked. It's really good.
Awesome.
I was really impressed with it. The only downside that I think I saw in customization with the multiplayer, because you are playing the character that you create. I think that's only available in multiplayer, and you can have like a Megatron head on a Autobot body, and the only problem with that is that when you're playing the game in the gameplay, you might not be able to tell the difference between an Autobot and a Decepticon because people are going to customize their characters the way that they want. The upside of that is, if you remember in War for Cybertron, how they had the disguise mode and how it was easy to see through the disguise because you just saw who the figure was and whatnot, and it just had different colors. I was like, this way, it kind of brings that back into play for everybody. You can have a disguise just by the fact that your character is unique and it's you know, created the way that it is. And the only way you can really tell is basically you put their sight on them and you find out whether or not they're an opponent or a friend. The other side about that is that to mix it up, you know, they might, you know, when they expire, they might switch to another character. So, you know, you have to really pay attention in the game of who you're shooting at so you know who's your friend and who isn't your friend. So it will kind of make things a little interesting for the multiplayer. So that's just a little thing that I observed while I was playing. I was like, dang, it's hard to figure out who's my friend and who's not my friend.
Right, yeah. So that's kind of weird because in War for Cybertron, didn't they kind of give each like a hue, like they kind of had like a glowing outline kind of thing, like yours was red, or their heads up display, like their colors,
yeah,
or their names were different colors or something.
Play was different, and like you could set out a pulse or whatever, and you can see where all the enemies were. The glow that was around them, they actually didn't really have a glow. They just had a little thing over the top of their head that said that they were the bad guy. It was red. But in this, I can't remember if they had the same option or not. I just remember when I was playing, the only way I could figure out that it was the bad guy or not, or my opponent, was to put my gun sight over them, and it turned red if it was somebody that I needed to shoot at. And it was all standard too, because like they had all of the accounts that everybody was playing on. It was just like TF, you know. It was just generic. So we didn't name them anything that we wanted to name them. It was just a generic.
Yeah.
So I mean,
they were like developer names.
Yeah, developer names or whatever that they created specifically just for that night. And I think afterwards they said they were going to scrub them. I was like, oh, okay, bummer. But no, it was. The other thing that I wanted to say, like in Dark of the Moon, they did this new thing where if you had ammo or a shield or any extra powers that you wanted to pick up while you're playing the game, it kind of glowed a different color. It was really, really bright. And then, like, when you put it on, like, the person that had the shield on would have, like, a blue outline all the way around them. In this, they've eliminated that. But if you want to, if you find ammo or you find a shield or you find something, it's going to have, like, a glow around it so that you know what it is that, oh, this is something I can pick up. And it's pretty easy to find. Rather than in War for Cybertron, I think sometimes it was hard to go find the ammunition and find different things. I think that for the shield, it kind of glowed a little bit, so you went and found it. But everything glows. Like, the ammunition is going to have, like, a yellow glow to it. And, The shield stuff is going to have a little bit of, it still has the blue glow to it. So I liked that, and the fact that you could find things pretty easy. Now, in the multiplayer, when you go down, when you're playing the multiplayer, there are some abilities that are randomly put out, and it's on a first-come, first-served basis. So if you find the shield, you get it, it's yours, anybody can get it. It's like, it's not like an ability that you're going to get that's already automatic with the character. And that's because the character already has one power of its own, and you can find some of these randomly. Another thing that I remember seeing that I thought was different than War for Cybertron, when a character dies in War for Cybertron, sometimes they leave behind their weapons. They do not do this in Fall of Cybertron. I asked about it, and they said that was intentional, and they found that it unbalanced the game, because then you'd have, like, a scout would get, like, this really super big weapon, and, you know, and so that's not available. All of the weapons that fall in War for Cybertron do not in Fall of Cybertron.
Okay.
We'll keep things balanced.
One major thing I always had an issue with in War for Cybertron, and what I did like in Dark of the Moon, was that there was, that your guns did not, you did not have to run around to look for ammo.
Uh-huh.
Do you still have to go around looking for ammo in Fall of Cybertron?
In the campaign, or in the
multiplayer? I guess both.
You do. You still have to go around and get it. But here's the thing, is that when you're in campaign and you shoot somebody, when they drop everything, like, you know, they die. And, you know, you make the characters expire. They drop ammo right there. It's okay. Like whatever's on that character was dropped, and I picked it up when I was playing the Megatron chapter. This was very true. I went up and I got the weapon stuff that they had. Oh, and that reminds me of another thing that I didn't talk about. Because like in War for Cybertron, when a character expired, they'd drop all these shards, and you'd pick those up, and they would help charge your abilities. In this, since you don't have those abilities, you pick up those shards, and those shards help you unlock stuff in Teletran 1, which is the store that you go and you can buy weapons in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I saw I was reading the achievements list for this, and it does seem like there's a lot more customization and weapons loadout and things like that this time around.
There is. In fact, some of the weapons that you have actually have upgrades. So if you buy a weapon, you can go back and buy upgrades for that weapon. And all of that will be available in the campaign. In multiplayer, it's a little bit different. I can't recall how it all works because I didn't really go to the Teletran in multiplayer, but they're going to be on two separate things. So if you unlock everything on the campaign, you still have stuff to unlock in multiplayer. But the way that you get it unlocked is a little bit different than what you do in campaign. So, but in campaign, what's really fun about it is that, like I said, as you kill and you go through the game and you expire characters and whatnot, you gather points, which then you can turn around and go to Teletran 1 in-game and buy weapons and upgrade weapons and upgrade abilities as well. They've got, like, a whole lot of things. It's not just all weapons. You can get, like, a shield, and you get different things that are in the game as well. So that made it, I thought, oh, well, that makes it really fun. As you're playing the game, you can buy more stuff. So I was like, oh, that's cool. I don't know if this means that you can, like, buy stuff like, you know, oh, I want to put credit on my, you know, Xbox Live account. I can use that. I don't know if that's in there as well. But, you know, hey, if you just go around and play the game and unlock stuff, that's probably better.
Yeah, I think it's similar to, I mean, a lot of the Call of Duty games are similar. Like, you earn more XP and things like that, and then you unlock different add-ons for your guns and things like that for multiplayer. Yeah. It makes sense for campaign that you have to, that you can buy them based on the shards and things, because that doesn't unbalance the game. But if everybody was able to just pour like $60, $70 and buy all these add-ons for multiplayer, it would dramatically destroy like any game, you know, like just the general enjoyability of the game. So.
Yeah. So yeah, as you play the game, you can unlock more stuff. So it's fun.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was a lot of information.
Yeah, thanks. Awesome. Yeah, it was fun, and I'm sure that I'm missing a lot of stuff. So if anybody has any questions, just feel free to either shoot me an email or ask the Radio Free Cybertron crowd, or even tweet, and I will be more than willing to talk about, you know, this game, because it's really a blast to play. And I only you know, played just the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure there's a whole lot of other stuff in here that I didn't get to play. I know we've seen gameplay for Bruticus. I didn't get to see any of that, but, you know, I'm sure that it would be pretty fun to go play him. So, I had a blast. It was great. Kudos to High Moon, because they were awesome. They were great. They were very accommodating, answered tons of questions and such. And they said, if I have any more, I can feel free to email them. So I was like, oh, cool.
Awesome.
I also got a really nice shirt, which I'm wearing right now. It's got Grimlock on it.
Oh, very nice.
If you pre-order the game, if anybody out there is at San Diego Comic-Con, if you go to their booth and pre-order the game at the booth, you'll get a free T-shirt. It'll either be Grimlock or Optimus Prime, because I've seen both those shirts.
Cool. Yeah. I bet that's one size fits all. And that means not me. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God, XV. Where did you get that?
Terrifying. God.
Hey, ow. I made it. Sweet.
Wow.
Oh,
I think I pooped myself.
Who picked that up for you?
Jack got that for me.
Oh, awesome. That was quick.
Yes, it was. He mailed it on Monday, and the mail actually worked this time.
Wow.
Nice.
USPS, you get it past this.
Well, not really. The box looked like it had been kicked in.
Uh-oh.
Do you like it?
But the toy was fine.
Do you like it?
Yes, because I found an interesting way to use the Dark Energon shard that you can clip onto the toy's chest. I'm not sure if you made it, man, his penis, didn't you?
Yes, he did.
Yes, Cliff Jumper's Energon boner fell off.
That's awesome.
Well, he is dead. I mean, it has to happen eventually.
Forgot to take Viagra.
Oh, I also got Donatello, too.
Is it which line? Is it the classics?
It's the new one, I guess.
Okay.
So.
I'm not sure the classics are actually being carried in stores.
Yeah.
They're not out yet.
I'm going to leave it in box.
Online.
Are they
leave it in box?
Are they out yet?
They have been released online.
I think it's supposed to be August, right, that the classics are coming out.
BBTS, I guess.
Well, Target.com has had them.
Really?
Yeah.
To Target.com. Okay.
Excellent. For, like, $15?
So what do you think of Donatello there, JD?
I haven't opened him. I think I'm going to leave him in the package. I don't know that I really want to... I'll decide if I'm really going to break him out or not. It was more just, like, for the novelty, because I always like Donatello. And because I want to, you know, support the line at least a little bit. I mean, Playmates is going... You know, balled out on this, so I kind of want to.
They are. I mean, at Toy Fair, they were betting big.
I want to support him if I can. I mean, Donatello's a figure that I would want, so, you know, I figured I'd throw in my $10 on it.
He does machine, so I am pretty fond of Donatello.
Peter, didn't Playmates give an estimate for what they expected the sewer playset to cost when it came out?
Yeah, I thought it was like,
$150 or something?
Yeah. I think it was a little less. Maybe. I can't remember. Why? Is the price, like, higher now, or what?
We don't know. We know it's still coming, but there's just no, like, price announcement or anything.
What is it, the sewer price?
I mean, that's what I gravitate toward calling it because, you know, I grew up with the original Turtle line and, you know, super playset.
Yeah.
The MSRP, so it's coming out in August, and the MSRP is $119.99.
Oh, God.
I was close now, wasn't I?
Yeah, but if you look, yeah. I mean, if you look at this picture, it's huge. It's just gigantic.
Oh, no, vast. I'm not denying it's huge. It's just a matter of, okay, they're releasing a $120 playset for a nostalgia toy line.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, no, this is, this is designed to work with the nostalgic toys as well as the new.
They're all the same size, so it's not like it matters.
Yeah, it's about
No, yeah. The Classics Turtles are like 6-7 inches tall.
Oh, how tall are the regular ones?
What is it, JD, like 4 inches?
No, they have to be taller than that.
No, this is like a...
They're like 5 inches.
Yeah.
I think they're about the regular... They're about the same size here, from what I can remember.
I've got my measuring tape right here. Let's find out.
Oh, right. Design is a little bit. But I've seen makes them look pretty small, though.
No, it's like 5 inches.
Because the playset is actually showcasing the new Nicktoons design toys.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it's made for.
Right.
It's for the new Turtle line.
Yeah. But it's, that new Turtle show should better be good, because...
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, that's kind of my concern with this, because, like, Playmates is pretty much... This either has to work, or there's not going to be Playmates anymore.
Yeah, this is their all or none. I mean, they're all in, you know? Like, yeah. This is it, you know?
It was Toy Fair. Toy Fair, it was essentially Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then some girl line that had, like, a 4x4 room.
So with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, sort of coming back in, you know... The limited line of Battle Beasts that are coming out, all these non-core, you know, Brian things are coming out that I'm just going to, like, I'm going to go broke.
Mm-hmm. Non-core, yeah. Brian.
They're not G.I. Joe Transformers.
You're going to have to make a choice between whether or not you want the new toys that are coming out, or whether or not you want that fifth mixer for your computer.
Yeah, that would
it's
be
a tough choice.
That would be the fifth one, actually.
So.
Do you want to plug in more wires, or do you want toys?
I have a Yamaha, the 3 Behringers, so yeah, I guess I'm the fifth.
I don't know, I like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff looks, I mean, the Nickelodeon stuff apparently is pretty good as well, like, the toys itself look pretty nice.
They look great.
Just, I don't think the show looks good.
And the kids watch
the toys are cool.
Okay, great. Let's see here. What else do we have going on this week?
Yeah.
Is that it? You know, we have way more show than I have room to put show.
Official images of Thundertron. I don't
know. Thundertron is never interested.
They're really trying to get us excited about Thundertron.
No, I'm just telling you. These
no, no, some I'm reason. In general, it's like, I don't even understand why that's a figure they're putting
in. Yeah, like at BotCon, everyone wanted to see up-close shots of Thundertron, and I'm like, why?
It's like,
if there's a third book, he'll actually do something.
Like I said, people want what they can't have, right? So it's like, great,
fifth mixer.
Sweet, Ultra Magnus, what about Thundertron? Where's my pictures of Thundertron? You guys suck.
Yes, that's
true. Oh, I got Thundertron. What about pictures of the con? Like, what about the dealer room? Huh? What about that? I don't get it. Why can't you guys do exactly what I want?
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the internet, right?
Yeah.
So
it's the internet.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, I guess that does it for RFC for this week. It's such a huge show. Hopefully, you were able to sit all the way through it. If not. You're not hearing this. So, for the guys...
Let's take a crap.
We'll see you next week. Have a good one.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/TF Radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. Copyright 2012 TF Radio Network.